Morning, everyone. My name is Gary McSweeney, and I teach at Living Wisdom School, and it's a great blessing to be here today to share with you the teachings of Yogananda. As I was preparing for this talk, and the topic being, is God there even where there's ignorance? I thought of the many stories I've heard over the years of the great saints who have, in the midst of injustice and even death, held on to their courage and to the light. This morning I thought of Joan of Arc being burned at the stake. Yogananda often used to tell the story of St. Anthony of the Desert, who was in a cave meditating for many years. And apparently it was like a test of jackals would come at night and attack him. And he would fight off the jackals. I don't know if they were physical or psychological tests. And Master used to tell the story in a thick Bengali accent. And he would say, St. Anthony, when he came through the test and came through it glowingly, said, God, why didn't you come to me when I called? And Master would quote God as saying, Anthony, I was just the same with you. I was always with you. But for us, at least for me, it doesn't always feel that way. So I had a start. I thought it really comes down to consciousness. What is the difference between these saints who can be totally unshaken? One of the turning points in my search, I was in college, College of Marin, and I read Bhagavad Gita. I took a comparative religious studies course, and I was introduced to the Bhagavad Gita. So I read it. And there was one quote in there that a yogi can stand amidst crashing worlds unshaken. And I thought, that's for me. I would love to not have this push-pull. I'm happy one minute, depressed the next. I'm anxious about my finances. I'm fearful of this situation. Just, it's tiresome. And so I started to think, okay, I'll start my research with that word consciousness. I use it all the time. But I didn't really think it through. What is consciousness? So I started to look through the books, The New Path by Swami Kriyananda, Autobiography of a Yogi by Yogananda, and I would go to the index and I would look up consciousness. Not surprisingly, there's lots and lots and lots of different references to that word in any book by Swami or Yogananda. But the first one that I came upon in The New Path was a story that I've heard Swami tell many times, but I read it in depth, and it really is to this point that we're talking about today. Swami Kriyananda, at that time, was J. Donald Walters, and he had left college, and he was intensely searching for meaning in life. He was asking himself, who am I? What is God? Is there a God? What can I do with my life? And he ended up working in a theater in Charleston, South Carolina. And he said it was a time of experimentation for him. He would go through the town and meet and hang out with just all different types of people, homeless people, drug addicts, drunks, sleazy business people, all the way up to the highest people in society. And he was just looking for who has the secret, who has the answer, something that I can latch onto, something I can believe in. Well, he went out on his own, and this is a testament to him. He went out on his own and he just started thinking about this whole question of God. He hadn't read any of the Eastern books. He was really doing it on his own. And he went out on this beach in Charleston and he was just looking at the stars and he had this profound experience that God had to be consciousness, infinite consciousness. And not only had he been made by God, but he had to be part of that same consciousness. And that our job, very simply, would be to raise our consciousness up until we had merged with the infinite. And he said he was just a revelation to him, and he decided at that moment that he would spend his whole time, his whole life, seeking God. So he goes back to his roommates at the time, and they're sharing an apartment. And he tells his friends about this great revelation. One of them said, oh, Don, why don't you just get drunk with us? You know, let's just sit down, forget all that stuff, just have a drink, you know. Another one said, no, let's go get some women, you know. Let's just go party out. We don't have to worry about these big problems. You're always overthinking everything. You're just so serious, Don. He said he compared them to a group of yapping puppies. So the lesson in this, if we're interested, and we are because we're here today, if you're interested in the divine, if you're interested in even higher consciousness, you may not get support from friends and family. People have a tendency to kind of want you to stay down at their level, and you're trying to raise up to another level. That brought me to another story that Asha told last time she gave Sunday service in reference to me. There was a string of teen suicides a couple years ago in Palo Alto, all at this one high school, and it really rocked the community. There was one, there was two, then there was three, and they started to put resources. What's going on here? And they all committed suicide in the same manner, and it was really bad. So they called a community meeting, and Helen and I decided to go as representatives of Living Wisdom School because they were searching for answers. And sometimes these tragedies that come in our lives do have a way of opening up our hearts and our minds to new possibilities. We never choose tragedies, but they do come. And in the room that night, you could tell people were open and people were grasping for some handle on this situation. I happened to be in the back, and this media guy came up to me, a newspaper reporter. He said, "So what are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I'm a teacher at a school, and I think what we do with these kids might be part of the solution that we're looking for. I'm not saying it's the only solution. I'm just thinking that a little meditation with teenagers, context, hope for life, some context to put everything in for them, might be beneficial." He said, "Well, you weren't at the first meeting then, were you?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, the one thing that they everyone agreed on was there would be no religion and no spirituality. They just wanted to keep that separate out of the debate because they just wanted to help kids." And we all, I think, can realize why you maybe not want a particular church in. But as Asha said the other week, because she articulates things so well, I mean, I can have the feeling, I knew it was unsettling, I didn't like his answer, I didn't like their decision, but it wasn't until Asha said it just a couple weeks ago. She said, "When you take Krishna, Buddha, Christ, Lao Tzu out of the equation, what you take out is transcendence. That's the teaching, is that we can transcend our humanness. And what are you left with when you take that completely out of the equation? You're left with materialism. You're left with you live, you make money, you die." And that just struck me as that is basically the key issue here. There's streams of consciousness. There's material consciousness. There's divine consciousness. This summer, I had a really blessed experience. I got to do a solo backpacking trip to Point Reyes. And there's something about that land that just resonates with me. So I hiked into Wildcat Camp. Beautiful day, hiking up through the firs, coming down. Get to the camp, set up my tent. And there's not much to do backpacking. But my son had given me a gift of a Kindle for Father's Day, and I had downloaded Autobiography of a Yogi. I've read the book many times. I've read parts of it many, many, countless times, but cover to cover, maybe 10 times over the years, I would suspect. It's my all-time favorite book. It's Swami's all-time favorite book. It's still on the bestseller list of spiritual classics. And I'm reading it. It was ideal. No phones, no internet, no contact, an empty beach, and there was this little cave that I made my own, just a tiny little cave that could only fit one, and I would tuck in there, ocean for a view, set up on the towel, just relax and read the Kindle. And for some reason, not having to wear reading glasses, I made the font big enough. It really made this a very special experience. And I'm reading the book, and the book is about, as many of you, if not all of you know, it's about different people, saints, stories about everyone from Gandhi to Tagore to Bose, the scientist. It's so varied. It's so well written. And I just felt my consciousness being lifted by it. And I was just thinking, this is the answer. This is spirituality without any dogma. This is spirituality without any sectarianism. This is, he jumps from Mohammed to Krishna to Christian saints, Saint Therese Newman. I'm like, this is the answer. This is what could help this world, Sanatana Dharma, the truth, the essence of all true religions. And I was just loving every minute, didn't even want the book to end. And I'm rearranging my towel, and I hear this, and I think, oh gosh, I broke my sunglasses. And I said, I can live with that. So I lift back the towel, and I've crushed the Kindle. I've just smashed the screen. Now, I'm going to go off on a tangent here, but maybe some will remember. There was a TV show, Twilight Zone. Do you remember? There was a classic episode where Burgess Meredith was a bank teller, and his boss kept telling him, if you want to get ahead in life, just concentrate on being a good bank teller. But all Burgess Meredith's character ever wanted to do was read books, and that's all he ever wanted to do. And he had these big, thick glasses because he needed to read. He read books so much. And his boss was always haranguing him, you know, just get ahead in business. And he's like, no, I just want to read books. So he goes into the basement during his lunch hour just to be left alone so he could read books. And suddenly the whole room shakes. He's deep down in the bank vault, but everything shakes. What's that, he wonders. So he comes up, and in true Twilight Zone fashion, Armageddon has struck. And a nuclear war, it was never really explained, but everything is gone. Everyone on the face of the earth is gone, and it's just Burgess Meredith. And he's wandering around, and he's disoriented, and he just doesn't know where to go next. And he comes upon the public library, and he realizes his dream has come true. No one is ever going to bother him. He has all the time in the world to read and all the books in the world to read. And just then he leans forward and his glasses fall down and they smash. And now it ends on a sad note that just Burgess Meredith is without his dream. I wasn't quite that bad. But I had gone from this high state to, I've broken the Kindle. Oh, God, my son gave me the Kindle. Oh, I can't finish AY. And I just watched my consciousness just go zoop. And I'm like, no, this is ridiculous. So I pulled it back. And then as I was hiking back out after my backpacking adventure, I was thinking, now, how can I hold on to this consciousness? I'm going to go into this school year. Every teacher rests up over the summer. But there's this impending doom waiting for us. It's when the kids arrive. I don't mean that. Are there any parents here? So now I'm going to shift stories again because there's another story, and this is about, what we all have here. We have satsang, we have sadhana, and we have the opportunity to serve. And that's what keeps our consciousness, you know. That's how we can raise our consciousness, that's how we can expand it. In the year 530, which is just about the depths of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, there's a 1,200-year descending cycle, and that ended in 500. So 530 is just the very, very beginning of ascending Kali. The Roman Empire collapsed in, 470, right before it, and then the Catholic Church rose to power right in the ascending Kali Yuga. So this is the very, very beginning of Kali Yuga, and a lot of darkness in Europe. And there's this monk by the name of Benedict. And Benedict starts a monastery in these very, very, very dark times. And he comes up with what was called the Benedictine Rule. And it included serving the poor. Mostly the main thing, though, was prayer and worship. Those were the two really big things. But he also insisted that all the monks and nuns do physical work. He also started schools. And he took the great literature of the time, even books that contradicted church doctrine, and he had the monks copy them. They made illuminated manuscripts. Many of you know this already. And it's really what helped save civilization through the Dark Ages. In the lowest periods of Kali Yuga, for some reason, everyone goes around burning libraries. And so a lot of the great knowledge is lost. And so these Catholic monks and nuns had a hand in saving that. So, flash forward, it's now 2012. What has happened to the Benedictine rule and these Benedictine monks and the nuns that have followed the rule? It's really interesting. There's a high school near here that I never even knew was run by the Benedictines. It's called Woodside Priory. And our kids go there. My son applied there. And we went to the open house. And my wife said, you know, there's something about that place. She met this really old monk there. He was like the last vestige because there's very few monks anymore. But something of that rule through the centuries has survived in that school. And the graduates that have left our school and that have gone there, I talked to them, it has kind of the same spark that Living Wisdom School has. And it all gets back to the story with Swami and with the meeting in Palo Alto. Is God everywhere, even in ignorance? And is it just our consciousness that has to change? It's something worth exploring. Obviously, I'm preaching to the choir. I would say we're all on board with that. Then the question is, well, how do we deepen our attunement? And we have all the tools right here. We have meditations. We have the opportunity to serve. Service is very grounding. And there are times when sadhana just doesn't cut it. It's hard. We're restless. We go through these astrological cycles. Sometimes for years, meditation isn't the easiest thing. You can always serve. Sometimes service makes you restless. You can go back to satsang, just being with like-minded souls. And then there's always, when those two fail, you can always go back and meditate and try and deepen your own personal attunement with the divine. It's a battle. It takes a long time. I sat back there in the 8-hour meditation, and it was a very interesting experience. I counted them up. It was like my 32nd. And I was kidding with my brother. Unfortunately, I was kidding on Facebook, so everyone heard the joke. But I said, you know, in those 32 meditations, there was probably about 3 minutes of actual meditation. That might be a slight exaggeration, but I was sitting back there. My mom came to visit me. She's been dead for 30 years. All of a sudden, I'm sitting there, and I'm like communing with my mom. My dad comes. All of my students come through my meditation, which tells me it was not a very deep meditation. But who even knows when we're all in that room today, you know, those days, and when we come here like this for the purification, there's something really valuable, but it's so interesting. It's like people take it for granted, or it's so subtle that we just kind of, we don't really realize what a precious gift it is. Satsang, sadhana, service, and whatever path you're on, or whatever direction you're going in, if you keep the divine in the center. We're now in 2012. The Mayan calendar ends. That's one prediction. I heard this one this week. NASA says that with these solar storms that are happening, this is science, this is not a psychic. There are solar storms that have already started, and they're sending particle waves to the world. And there's two different schools of thought amongst the scientists. Some say, well, I don't think it'll be that serious. One group of scientists said, well, it'll disrupt communication. It could, they said in some parts you'll be without electricity for a few days. In some parts, they'll be without electricity for a few weeks. Some parts, they'll be without electricity for a few months. And there's going to be some parts of the globe without electricity, he said, for a few years. And if you just think about what would happen to Silicon Valley without electricity, and who knows what's going to happen. These predictions have been going on. I've majored in predictions of cataclysms since the 70s. I just thrive on them. Even I am tired of them. One thing to remember about the Mayans, they used to do human sacrifice, so I'm not sure, you know, maybe we wouldn't take everything they said. But one thing I do know that Master said, that your spine can be your bomb shelter. You can get so strong in yourself, and I think when we're at a place where we all need each other, it's not, but if you can do it by yourself, I'm all for it. But this community that we have, I'm not talking about the physical community, that's part of it, but this virtual community or this community can be an incredible raft across these difficult times. And if you think about the example of Saint Benedict, this small group in the middle of total darkness, and something has actually survived all the way into this century, and there's this spark of the divine still in that school. Thank you.